chickens in the houses, they got chickens in the trees, chicken in the pots, the motto of the Petalumis, out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got me started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20, and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Chicken in the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken, Petaluma never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
How many eggs does a chicken lay? Well, if it is a mature hen at her laying peak, it is about one egg every 28 hours, whether she wants to or not. That is what a hen does, just about every 28 hours. So you get between 6 and 7 a week. It varies, of course, with the actual breed and particularly the age of the chicken, but that's a good average. Hello, it's Mouthful Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming. It's Michelle Anna Jordan here live in the studio with you. We have just a great show coming up for you. Before we get there, I wanted to tell you a couple of things. First of all, Mouthful is looking for an intern, and that can mean several different things depending on what you are interested in. And you can go to Mouthful's Facebook page and read a little bit more about the details. But basically, I want somebody who will come to the program every Sunday night that we are live. And you have to have some rudimentary photography skills because I want to start photographing our guests. But more than that, I want somebody to help me book. I want someone to help promote the show through social media. And what you get in return is, if you're interested in marketing and want to develop your marketing skills and make contacts in the food, wine, and farming business, then you certainly get that. But also, if you're interested in learning radio, if you're interested in learning how to engineer or even record and edit, we will make that happen. So if you're interested, you can either go to the Facebook page for Mouthful and send me a private message, or just reach out to me at catsmilk@sonic.net. And I will be posting this on KRCB's website sometime during the week as well. And I also want to tell you, coming up either next week or the week after, we're going to have another very special guest, Crescent Dragon Wagon. Yes, that's her name, Crescent Dragon Wagon. And you can, in the meantime, if you wonder, is that really her name? What kind of hippies were her parents? You can find the story. It's not her real name, but it's a name she's had for a very long time for a great reason. You can go to dragonwagon.com. And she was in the studio on Thursday, and we pre-recorded a show. And the reason I'm holding off for a couple of weeks is she's made a very special offer to Mouthful listeners. She's going to be teaching a class online throughout the month of April, and she's given a code for anyone listening to Mouthful for 20% off. So I want to do a more marketing than I typically do for shows to build up some momentum, because she's really great. She's a food writer. She writes novels. She writes poetry. She's written about 28 children's books. She's a great teacher. So she really warrants a whole lot of attention. So dragonwagon.com is where you can find out about her, and then we'll be letting you know every day of the week once she will be on Sunday. Now, I have someone really special in the studio, very special to me, and, you know, bless Facebook. It's how I found her on, what was it, Black Farmers Market website, and her name is Laurel Saxena. She has the Saxena Clinic. She has been voted, I think, 5 years in a row, yeah, the best acupuncturist in Sonoma County. She deserves it. I never really feel a needle going in. It's remarkable. She also knows a lot about nutrition. And I believe you wrote a blog called A Year of Kanji, which is fascinating.
Thank you.
And we'll talk about that. And then you have a new blog,
WellSonoma.com,
which I love. She has the cutest little boy, Kamal. Oh, my gosh. You will see pictures of him on her blog. A wonderful husband, wonderful chickens, a beautiful home. Welcome to Mouthful.
Thanks, Michelle. I think that's the nicest introduction I've ever gotten.
Well, I don't even have words to say how much I appreciate what you do and just who you and your family are. It's really wonderful. And
thank you.
It was so great to read A Year in Kanji. I've been reading through that. Forget exactly when I discovered Kanji. It's been quite a while, but I've learned about it. I've learned more about it since I met you. And let's start out there. Let's start out with A Year of Kanji. Okay. Why you wrote it, what it is, and why people should know about it.
That's a great question. Well, so I started writing. Well, it was a really fun blog to write. I decided to make the commitment to eat kanji every day for a year. And what kanji is, it's usually translated as gruel, which makes it sound really unappetizing.
Yeah, it makes it sound like something from a Dickens novel.
Exactly. Please, sir. But it's delicious. And it's really comforting. It can be really rich. It's kind of like an Asian version of risotto. I like to say, right?
So yeah, it's based on rice.
It's rice and stock or water, and it's just like making a pot of rice, except with a much higher liquid to grain ratio. And so I made this commitment to eat kanji every day because I recommend to all of the patients that come through my clinic that they should eat a warm and easily digestible breakfast every day. And kanji is, from a Chinese medical perspective, pretty much the most prime example of that. So it wasn't a big sacrifice for me to make a commitment to eat a bowl of kanji every morning. I was very happy to do it. Sometimes I would eat it for lunch also and dinner.
I do that
yeah.
too.
And because my wonderful husband Adam is a fabulous cook, I knew I could count on him to make these amazing, amazing renditions of kanji. He made a beef rendang kanji. He made a chicken curry kanji. I have all the recipes on the blog. So it was never boring. Always really exciting and always really healthful.
And I just made one, actually, which someone called boring. But that's because she didn't put any of the... I use a lot of condiments. Unless I put a lot of flavorings in the kanji, I will sometimes use a number of condiments on top. And a dear friend was healing from a very bad car accident, as well as bronchitis. And she's a vegetarian. So I made a nettle kanji. Because nettles had just come to the farmer's market. So I used, I don't think I had any vegetable broth. So I just did water, jasmine rice, nettles, salt and pepper.
That sounds delicious.
And then I told her, I said, you know, put some hot sauce. You know, I told her the condiments to put on. And when I went to pick up the container, I said, so how was the kanji? And she said, well, it was kind of boring. I said, didn't you do the condiments? And she said, no, I was lazy.
Oh, well, in that case.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's kind of a canvas.
Yeah,
right?
it is, exactly.
It needs to be painted.
Exactly. Like polenta. People
exactly.
that think polenta is boring. It's like, it's a canvas.
Right. It's not really fun to eat oatmeal just plain either.
Well. Worst thing in the world to me. Although I did actually eat oatmeal once and like it. I made steel cut overnight in a slow cooker.
Hmm.
And then I added savory condiments, not yes. sweet condiments, and that was actually good.
So it was sort of a congee of oats.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that was quite good.
That sounds delicious.
So you often post on Facebook what your breakfast has been, and now on your blog.
Yes.
And you'll have roasted chicken,
uh-huh.
some greens, different kinds of things. So you put not just condiments, but you'll put toppings.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So typically for breakfast, I always have rice or congee, and then an egg from my chickens.
Yes.
And
poach. How do you do the eggs? Fried eggs?
So let's see. Sometimes I poach. Sometimes I'll just do a bunch of hard-boiled eggs or soft-boiled okay. eggs and keep them in the fridge for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. Usually I do an over easy uh-huh. in coconut oil in Adam's
yes.
grandmother's cast iron skillet.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah, it's great. And then a ton of greens. So whatever mm-hmm. we have going crazy in the garden. Right uh-huh. now it's beet greens. We just have...
I just found I have a whole bag of beet greens that I sautéed and put in the freezer.
They're so
good. I'm going to pull those out for congee.
Nice. Perfect.
Yeah, and then one of the things I've been doing, like last week, end of last week, mm-hmm. I made picadillo.
Mm.
I love picadillo.
It's so good.
Just love it. And I made picadillo with the Mexican-style bulk chorizo from Franco Dunn, you know, One World Sausage.
Yes.
I just had some. So I made plain congee, and then I made picadillo, and had a lot of rice. I didn't make congee. I made steamed rice.
Okay,
and then I had quite a bit left over.
Uh-huh.
And I had some nice homemade stock.
Uh-huh.
So I made congee out of the leftover rice,
uh-huh.
and then I stirred in the leftover picadillo.
That's a perfect condiment for congee.
And that's what I'm going to have for dinner.
That's great.
And I'll probably...
I'm a little jealous. That sounds delicious.
I probably put some sauteed... There was beautiful spinach at the farmer's market today. Mm. So I'm going to put, you know, I'll wilt some spinach and put that on top. And, you know, if I'm really hungry, I'll poach an egg. One of your eggs that you brought me.
Oh, that's
great.
I'll
poach a pullet egg. So yeah. It's just one of the best things. And if you're... So many people have viruses right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just such a great convalescent food.
It really is. It doesn't tax your digestive system. Mm-hmm. So the resources that your digestive system needs to break down and digest the food can be devoted instead to sending nourishment to the tissues and helping you heal faster.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're... By profession, you're an acupuncturist.
Yeah.
Now, I'm ignorant on one thing. What's the root? Is there a country? Is there somewhere that acupuncture arose from? Is it a Chinese tradition?
It is. It is
okay.
a Chinese tradition. And there are many different schools of acupuncture
right.
now. There
yeah.
are schools of Korean and Japanese and French acupuncture.
There wasn't, first one I had, I think she was Korean, but she worked on Russian athletes.
Fascinating.
Yeah. So so it does come out of China.
It
just
come originally
sure.
out of China. Yeah. And I practice the traditional Chinese medicine mm-hmm. is what the school is called.
And then for my first appointment, gosh, a year ago, more than mm-hmm, a year
at
ago.
At least, yeah.
It was January 2nd of last year.
Oh.
I just have that kind of memory.
Wow.
You have a very strong nutritional component
yes.
with what you do. Now, is that common to traditional acupuncturists?
I believe it should be.
Mm-hmm.
I think most acupuncturists, yes, have a pretty strong background in Eastern nutrition and mm-hmm. hopefully Western nutrition as well.
Uh-huh.
So acupuncture and Chinese herbology are really two sides of the same practice.
Mm-hmm.
And Chinese herbology and Chinese nutritional therapy are pretty inextricable
mm-hmm.
because a lot of the Chinese herbs are also things that you could find in a Chinese grocery store that you would end up putting in your congee
right.
or in your soup. Congee is prescribed medicinally. There are a lot of very specifically medicinal congees, for example.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So
yes.
Talk a little bit more about that.
Oh, so for example, I tend to put ginger in most of my congee.
Mm-hmm.
And ginger, as I'm sure you know, is a very strongly medicinal herb.
Mm-hmm.
Shengjiang is the Chinese term for it, for fresh ginger. And if you have a cold, just a little cold, if you're getting a bug, sometimes just a lot of ginger tea and ginger in soup and ginger in congee mm-hmm. can stop the cold before it gets started, for example.
Oh, that's so good to know. Now, I have a question mm-hmm. about that. Does it always have to be fresh ginger? Because what if you feel a cold coming on and you're too miserable to leave the house and you don't have any fresh ginger,
uh-huh.
but you have good quality dried ginger? Will
oh, yeah.
that work?
It will work. So from the Chinese herbal perspective, the dry ginger is a lot stronger in terms of its heating capacity and warming energy than fresh ginger. Mm-hmm. So you would just use less of it.
Oh, okay.
You know, there are herbs, the Chinese hawthorn berry you can add to lower, to manage hyperlipidemia, high cholesterol, high triglycerides, for example.
Uh-huh.
Doing that regularly. Goji berries and chrysanthemum flowers you can add to help preserve eyesight and for liver health. And,
yeah. Oh, interesting.
Pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
All of the different herbs.
Yeah. One of the things you said to me the first time we met was, what you eat is everything.
Oh, yes. It's so important.
I think from my experience, Asian people seem to be more sort of deeply aware of that.
Uh-huh.
And there seems to be a bigger disconnect at least in the Western world, as far as America goes. Mm. What do you find in your practice?
It's a good question. I will say, because I talk to all of my patients about what they eat extensively, as you know also, and you and I always have so much fun talking about what you're eating.
You said I was the first person who not only knew what kanji was,
I was so thrilled.
Made it all the time.
I was so happy because your eyes just lit up with recognition, and I've never seen that. It was great. So I do have some patients that will talk about food as if it's purely sustenance. They eat it to stay alive.
Yes.
They're not eating for pleasure. I've never met an Asian person who says that, if I'm a big believer that we should all be eating for pleasure all the time, and that there is a way to do that that remains really healthy, and that basically once we clear all of the junk out, all of the emotional connections to food, all of the memories around it, and just really connect to our intuition, then generally what we want to eat is what's best for us.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree.
Absolutely.
And so many people, at least in this country, I don't know what it's like in other countries, but in this country, they have so many early traumas.
Yes.
And I read an article, a number of years ago, about how food is the first thing that a child realizes it can control. What goes into its mouth.
Wow.
And it talked about neophobic.
Yes.
And neophilic.
Mm-hmm.
And that if you, neophobic, of course, being, you know, an aversion to new tastes or new things, and neophilic being welcome to new things.
Mm-hmm.
And it talked about how parents shouldn't make eating anything an issue.
No.
Because you immediately make that the territory of a power play.
Yes.
And you can easily turn your kid into a neophobic person, and it can last a whole lifetime.
Absolutely.
And it can certainly last into the 20s if you do that. And a dear friend of mine who might be listening, I invited her over to my house. I invited her to a dinner party. Worst dinner party I ever gave. It's on my birthday, and I invited a group of people that I wanted to have around the dinner party, each for particular reasons. There was one guy I wanted to come because this is when 6 Feet Under was on, and he was really into 6 Feet Under, and so I wanted him to talk about 6 Feet Under. And then I had a good friend of his who's a good friend of mine with a reporter who would really respond to what was this woman friend was going through.
Mm-hmm.
And then my other friend who will always keep a conversation going, thank God she was there, but her boyfriend wouldn't come because he was afraid I was going to force him to eat vegetables.
Just vegetables in general.
Well, whatever vegetables I had on the table, he thought that I might like really insist to eat the vegetables. And I felt so sad for him.
It's so like, he just didn't come?
No, he didn't come.
Oh, that is sad.
And it's like, I would never, ever, ever do that.
Of course not.
But it just made me think, I wondered if he was one of those people who had that very early battle with his parents and
possibly
just ended up with fear. I mean, I had that when I was little.
Sure.
I wouldn't go to summer camp because I was terrified they were going to force me to eat oatmeal. Because I'd been forced to eat oatmeal
yes.
in nursery school. And they had to pry my hands off the cyclone fence because I would stand at the cyclone fence sobbing and calling for my mother because I hated oatmeal.
Aww.
And so, you know,
that's such a sad story, Michelle.
My mother used to color oatmeal pink. And I would hide under the kitchen table. And it's like, I might be three, but I still know it's oatmeal. I'm not stupid.
No.
And so she finally gave up. She quit trying to force me to eat oatmeal. But I was pretty neophobic.
Sure.
Until I was on my own. And then very slowly started coming to terms with... I mean, I started cooking when I was seven. Mm. But I was pretty timid about new foods until I was really completely on my own and could make my own decisions.
Well, and you know, kids that age, I was just talking to a really good friend of mine who has a 4-year-old about my 3.5-year-old and his own neophobia. But there is an evolutionary reason for little people who are newly mobile to be circumspect about new foods.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are able to run around all of a sudden and have this whole world of possibility open to them, and some of those things are dangerous.
Yes, some will kill you.
Right. So I feel like I think you're absolutely right. We shouldn't try to forcefully override mm-hmm. the neophobia.
Yeah.
I try to just sort of leave out a lot of healthy choices.
Here's some options.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And honestly, given his druthers, he will, Kamal, who I think is listening now. Hi, Bunny Rabbit. Kamal will always choose fruit over basically anything.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, you said that once. He would live on what? Bananas and oranges.
Bananas and oranges and whatever is in season. Berries in uh-huh. summer. You know, so yeah.
And between bananas and oranges, he's getting a lot of great nutrients.
Exactly. I'm not too worried.
Not you guys.
I think he has some good instincts.
Yes, he absolutely has some good instincts.
Thanks.
Well, going back to the acupuncture part of things,
mm-hmm.
Do you have to deal with a lot of fear of needles?
Absolutely, yes. And I think, I would say about, I always say this, about, 80% of new patients come in afraid of needles.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is totally understandable. I think I always say, kind of like the neophobic toddlers, I say it's pretty wise to be circumspect about somebody about to, you know, poke a sharp object into your body.
Mm-hmm.
Good thing to feel a little fear of. And then usually by, you know, the end of their treatment, they're not afraid anymore.
Right.
Because the needles are so tiny, about the thickness of a human hair. As you said, they don't usually hurt at
all. You don't feel them. You literally do not feel them.
They just kind of slip right in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where did you study?
Let's see. I studied at Pacific College of Oriental Medicine, which is in New York City and San Diego. And I did my first 3 years of my master's degree at the New York campus. And then for my clinical internship year, the final year, I transferred to San Diego. Mm-hmm. They had some really great externship rotations.
Oh, nice. Where did you go? Where did you spend time?
So I did a rotation at the San Diego Memorial Hospice. Which was an amazing and profound learning experience, absolutely. Also at the UCSD Owen Clinic, which is mm-hmm. an outpatient clinic for HIV and AIDS patients.
Oh, wow.
There was a downtown free clinic for low-income seniors, which mm-hmm. was always busy and exciting mm-hmm. and really fun. It was a great year. Learned a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Learned a lot really quickly.
And how did you end up here in Sonoma County?
I met Adam, my husband.
Oh, where'd you meet him?
This is such an embarrassing story. So the website Craigslist has forums, and mm-hmm. it has a food forum. A culinary
I didn't know
forum.
That.
Yes.
Okay.
Has a food forum. And so Adam and I were both on the food forum. I was living in Manhattan with a guy. We weren't. And Adam was living here in Santa Rosa, mm-hmm. and I was looking for recipes to mail to my best friend in Honolulu. So she was pregnant and just didn't have a lot of time, and so she wasn't eating really well.
Mm-hmm.
So I needed recipes that were really specific. I had to be able to mail them from New York to Hawaii. They needed to be something she could eat while running around and in the car, and they needed to be healthy. And so I posted on the food forum asking for recipes. And Adam had just done a really similar thing for one of his pregnant friends. So he sent me a bunch of recipes as an email. And I emailed him back questions. And we ended up being pen pals for years. And now we're married. And we have a kid.
That is so great. And on that note, I think we should take a little very relevant musical break here on Mouthful.
I love, and I knew I had to run away, yeah, and get down on my knees and pray.
get down on her knees. Oh, that's how it begins. She'll feel those needles they pins. Partner, partner. Why can't I stop and tell myself I'm wrong? I'm wrong, so wrong. Why can't I stand up and tell myself I'm strong? Because I saw her today. I saw her face. It was the face I loved. And I knew I had to run away, yeah. And get down on my knees and pray, yeah. That they go away.
That, of course, the Ramones covering the great Searchers song, Needles and Pins. And we are talking with acupuncturist Laurel Saxena. You can find out all about her business at Saxena, thesaxenaclinic.com. And it is so easy to make an appointment to see you.
Oh, yes.
You know, you don't have to make a phone call and talk to a receptionist and get on hold. You just go to the website. It's fabulous. A
couple of little clicks.
Yes. And then you get a reminder. It's just so efficient.
Oh, I'm glad.
It is. It's really, it's perfect. Everyone who does appointments for anything, for car repairs, anything, they should do it like that. It's just great.
I really like the software that I use. Yeah,
yes.
Great.
When did you open your business?
2009.
2009.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
And it's upstairs, right immediately next door to La Vera Pizza.
Mm-hmm. Just upstairs.
And then just upstairs.
Yep.
And it's the colors of your office. It's my color. It's one of my favorite color schemes.
I know. We really connect on red.
Yes, we connect on red, but on deep gray.
Yes.
And on paper umbrellas.
Oh, right. Yes.
Yes. So it's we have very similar aesthetics.
Yeah, we do.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about the new blog.
Okay.
Well, Sonoma.
Sonoma.
I'm not sure. From my vantage point, part of the motivation for this must be the responses you've gotten from some of your wonderful posts on your Facebook page.
Yes. It was. I just sort of wanted to create a place to combine my clinical work and my writing work and showcase the way they inform each other, I think.
Because you're really beautiful. You're a very evocative and beautiful writer.
Thank you. Coming from you, that just means the world.
I love your writing. I love it. It's very immediate. It's very real. It's not pretentious. It's just perfect. You feel like you know you. You are right. You know, you're just right there. And sort of feel like you know Kamal and your husband and your chickens. So talk a little bit about the goal or the what you get at Well Sonoma.
Yeah, so I chose the name Well because of the multiple shades of meaning. Obviously, there's the shade around like health and wellness. Mm-hmm. There's also, I tell people a lot that they need to make sure that they are replenishing their own well, the well of their good intentions, the well of their energy.
The well goes down deep into wherever it goes.
Wherever it goes, and everyone has a different way of feeding it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the people that I treat come in, and they're caregivers by nature. They're helping people. They are parents, teachers, other healthcare practitioners, people like you who just are very nurturing to your friends and the people you care about. And a lot of times we give so much out from our well, and we don't put it back, and we don't notice until we're really, really low. Mm-hmm. And so I use that metaphor a lot
that's
with
great.
People. And then also it's kind of like a beginning of a sentence. Well, what are we going to do about this?
Yes.
Well, what comes next? Well, what's your next step?
Yeah. Perfect.
And I've just loved having kind of this blank canvas to I guess, define my own voice a little more as a practitioner and as a writer.
Mm-hmm. When did you start it? Really recently.
Like a month ago?
Okay, yeah. And how often are you able to post?
I'm trying to post almost daily. Mm-hmm. That's my not very official rule for myself. So sometimes that looks like twice a week, and sometimes that looks like every day.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I always try to start every post with what I eat for breakfast, even though it's mostly the same thing every day.
That's okay. There's always little variations.
Yeah.
And most people, I think, who eat breakfast, and I was somebody who didn't eat breakfast.
Oh.
It was extremely rare. I mean, mm-hmm. I ate breakfast if I was traveling because it was partly a social thing.
Uh-huh.
So if I'm in New Orleans, I'm going to go to Cafe Du Monde for breakfast. There's no question.
Sure.
And, you know, one of the places I knew about congee before I went to Malaysia.
Mm.
But when I went to Malaysia, one of the offerings at breakfast, and I love Asian breakfast. I love Japanese, whatever. Mm-hmm. I love them. And people were always trying to give me bacon, eggs, and potatoes.
Right.
And they said because they're two nationalities that want their own breakfast, Japanese and American.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's what I've been told in many parts of the world when I've traveled.
Huh.
But it's like, no, I want Asian breakfast. And then this one guy at this great hotel in Kuala Lumpur, he wouldn't let me eat congee for breakfast. He said, no, it makes you go to the bathroom too much. No. So I waited until he was, and he was like the manager of the hotel or something. So I just waited until he was gone, and then I went and got some congee.
Good for you. Good.
But
that's hilarious.
I didn't find it to be true.
No.
Anyway, I love Asian breakfast, but I think most people, you know, they have cereal every morning.
Yes.
Or they have oatmeal every morning.
Right.
So, and you made the best, I don't want to say argument, you made the best reason for eating breakfast.
Remind me what it was.
You said, when you haven't eaten for a really long time, uh-huh. you wake up,
mm-hmm.
Your body, if you don't feed it, mm-hmm. if you don't eat, it goes into that fight or flight. You will get anxiety.
Sure, yes.
So do you want to talk a little about that? Because I thought that that was, I mean, most people throughout my life said, it's the most important meal. You have to eat breakfast.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, no, I don't. I'm not hungry. So
I make my own decisions. Yeah, no, I think that, I don't like to say I specialize in anything in particular just because acupuncture and Chinese medicine are literally holistic practices, mm-hmm. right? So we treat the whole person. But I will say I see more anxiety than almost any other health challenge.
Uh-huh.
So, I other acupuncturists will send me their patients with anxiety that isn't being resolved. And I think that's kind of a lot of what people come to me to see.
Mm-hmm. So different acupuncturists have different areas that they specialize in.
I think we kind of just find it through practice. As
uh-huh.
So I tend to specialize in anxiety and depression. And the first thing I evaluate for if someone comes to me with a history of anxiety is whether their blood sugar is kept stable, whether there's any chance of hypoglycemia.
Mm-hmm.
Because yes, when your blood sugar is crashing, as it does after a long fast or sleeping all night, you mm-hmm. know, it's really easy to become anxious.
Mm-hmm.
It is natural. It's again, evolutionary. Our bodies say,
right.
Oh no, what if I'm going to starve?
Exactly.
I should panic.
Yeah.
So it's one of the best ways to manage anxiety is to eat a breakfast that isn't too challenging to digest, because again, your body's just waking up.
Mm-hmm.
And then to kind of eat, you know, small meals throughout the day, I mm-hmm. think is really the best way.
Uh-huh. I think that there's so much wisdom in that. And I've certainly noticed, because I have a tendency towards anxiety, as you certainly know. And I think, you know, this world that we live in mm-hmm. right now, especially if you're self-employed,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's a lot of reasons for anxiety. So anything you can do to support it,
yes,
it's a great thing.
Oh, yeah.
Something else I find interesting about Chinese view of food versus some of the niche diets mm-hmm. of America is this whole thing of raw.
Mm.
It has to be raw. You need to eat a lot of raw, especially you need to eat lots of raw grains, raw vegetables, and that's the best thing you can do.
Right.
Chinese does not agree.
No, not at all. So one of the fun things about traditional Chinese medicine is salad is a little bit considered a junk food.
That's so interesting.
Like a once in a while food. So, you know, it's not that it's a terrible thing to have a salad here and there, but mm-hmm. I would never recommend an entree salad nightly.
Uh-huh.
For dinner, which some people do.
Absolutely.
All the time, especially here in California.
Yes.
So the idea is just that basically, again, your digestive system has to work a lot harder on raw vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that people who are really strongly in favor of 100% raw food diets will point to the fact that, for example, a bowl of raw kale and the equivalent bowl of cooked kale, the raw kale, if you test it, will appear to have more nutrients intact.
Mm-hmm.
This is true. However, once those two bowls of kale have passed through a human digestive system, the cooked kale is actually a lot more bioavailable in terms of its nutrients mm-hmm. to the human body, because we're not losing so much just in the processing of
right.
it. So I always recommend lots of vegetables, mm-hmm. lots of cooked greens, stir-fried, steamed. Mm-hmm. I'm on quite a campaign to get breakfast vegetables recognized as a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why people don't think of vegetables for breakfast. I love vegetables for breakfast.
People don't think of vegetables, and they don't think of soup.
Soup.
I love soup at
breakfast.
Miso
soup is such a classic Japanese breakfast food.
And one I did lately, recovering from this virus, mm-hmm. I cooked sweet potato and potato in some homemade chicken stock. And
that
just
is so good.
With ginger.
Yes.
And just drank it for breakfast.
That's so healing. That's really, you know, both sweet potato and ginger are really tonifying to the spleen energy,
mm-hmm.
which
right.
in Chinese medicine relates to levels of anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So if your spleen is stronger,
mm-hmm.
as it would be from lots of sweet potato and ginger, then mm-hmm. you are less susceptible to
anxiety
and lots of other things.
Yeah. So. And I find for me, because I don't have much of a sweet tooth,
mm-hmm.
so I find combining the sweet potato with a regular potato,
yep.
you know, cuts that sweetness.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, I don't know if it's recommended, but I add black pepper.
Black pepper is great. And it's just delicious.
It's delicious, and it goes so beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of turmeric?
You know,
because it's big, right? It's really
huge.
Big right now.
It's huge. I'm actually about to try growing some. I think... So I have to say, it doesn't show up in the Chinese pharmacopoeia of herbs as readily as it does in like Hawaiian plant medicine,
mm-hmm.
where it shows up everywhere, or certainly in Ayurveda, where it's maybe the primary herb.
Oh, okay.
I think ginger sort of occupies that place in Chinese medicine.
Uh-huh.
But turmeric certainly has some antimicrobial properties. It can certainly, it's thought to support antiviral activity,
mm-hmm.
which is helpful. And it is beautiful. It makes your food a beautiful
it's
color
beautiful.
And it tastes delicious and earthy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it's considered a warming spice, I
uh-huh.
would say, in Chinese medicine. So it can be a good thing. It's a nice, mildly warming spice.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that I think is very informative in Chinese nutrition is mm-hmm. this idea of cooling
mm-hmm.
and warming.
Yes.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So everyone has a different response to different temperatures, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some people are the first one to take off their jacket in a warmer room. Right, exactly. And some people, like me, are the first to put on my jacket and close the window and turn off the air conditioner. And so there are a lot of potential symptoms that can go along with those preferences. So
mm-hmm.
For someone, let's see, what would an example of like a hot pathology be? So... If your colds and flus always start with a sore throat,
mm-hmm.
that typically points to heat. If there is a tendency towards insomnia, if there's a tendency towards really vivid dreams, obvious symptoms of heat like flushing or sweating, we'll typically recommend more cooling foods. So
mm-hmm.
foods that are higher in moisture content, foods that are cooked in a moist method, so, you know, soup, stew, steam,
mm-hmm.
instead of broiling or roasting.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, what are the really great cooling herbs? Things like mint.
What about cilantro?
That's a good question. I would think... I don't know where it shows up in the Chinese pharmacopoeia, but
I've always thought it would be cooling because it's refreshing on the palate.
It is. It is. That's a really good question.
Yeah, a friend who was doing Chinese medicine and
uh-huh.
acupuncture for very serious Crohn's disease,
uh-huh.
he thought he couldn't eat cilantro.
Oh.
And I told him to look into it. I said, no, I actually think it's cooling, but I haven't found out what he found out. So,
I would call it because, you know... When you cook it, it's like sometimes I eat it like a vegetable. Like I'll just cook a bunch of cilantro, and it's almost like a more succulent green, which would certainly mm-hmm. put it in the more cooling
and the
category.
The roots are pretty moist, and the roots have great flavor.
Oh,
there are certain foods. In fact, a reader, my column, just wrote to me. So I had a recipe maybe last week or the week before for ants climbing trees, which is I forget if it's not Japanese. It might be Chinese that I found in some cookbook years ago and I make my version. But it's rice noodles. It's got a lot of heat in it. Mm-hmm. But it's got pounded cilantro roots in it.
Interesting.
And it's so good.
Wow.
And a reader wrote and asked me where to get cilantro roots. Huh. And go to buy cilantro at the farmer's market. A lot of them sell it with the roots intact.
Interesting.
Or any Asian market. Asian markets right. will always have right. the roots attached.
Right. Oh, wow. I have never tried the root.
It's what really good. It adds, huh. it's the same flavor, but it's more moist. And it's, I don't know how to describe it other than it's a little deeper.
Yeah.
But for certain things, I think it's Asian salt egg sauce. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm getting, there's so many great eggs around.
So many eggs.
I'm going to make some salt eggs. And
nice.
Then there's a sauce with salt eggs that has, I think it's garlic, cilantro root, and something else. And it's all pounded and smushed together. And then it's a great condiment on any kind of fish. Huh. But it's also good on rice.
Yeah.
It'd probably be good on congee. I haven't tried it. I haven't made it in years because, you know, it takes a few weeks or months to make the salt eggs.
Okay. Do you do that where you put it like a clay pot and bury it with lime and that whole?
No, I haven't done that. I make a brine.
Oh, wow.
A water and salt brine. Uh-huh. Cool it, uh-huh. you know, because you heat it to dissolve the salt.
Okay.
And then you put the eggs in their shells, of course. You put eggs in, I do a quart jar.
Uh-huh.
And if you're doing pullet eggs, you could fit a whole quart in.
Yeah.
I mean, you could put a whole dozen into a quart jar. And then you pour the brine over it. Just put it in a dark cupboard. And depending on the size of the eggs, it'll take from like 6 weeks to 3 months.
Wow.
And then the yolk is not cooked yet. It's penetrating, you know, the brine penetrates all the way through the egg. But it's, then what you do is you cook that egg to hard boil. So you cook it for 10 to 12 minutes.
Huh.
And then you eat it or you make it into a sauce.
And how is it taste? Is it just saltier? Is the texture really different?
The texture isn't, excuse me, the texture isn't so different. But it's got this deep saltiness.
Interesting.
Not over, it's, the salt is more like a bass note than a melody line.
Uh-huh.
Just really good.
Sounds fantastic. And easy.
Easy.
I should try that.
Yeah, very easy. It's in a recipe for it is in my salt and pepper book.
Oh, great. I have that book.
Oh, awesome. So anyway, we just go down so many alleys here on Mouthful. I forget how we got to salt, eggs, and pepper and stuff. But we've only got about 15 minutes left.
So okay.
I want to go back to your practice.
Okay.
And the big picture of overall health.
Yes.
Where do you plug in acupuncture? When should somebody think about attempting acupuncture? Where do they add that into their whole health?
That is
approach.
That is an excellent question.
Oh, good. Thank you.
It's a great question.
I mean, well, for me, it's like what I do.
Yeah. No, and I'm so glad you do.
And that's, I mean,
we have such a great time.
Yeah, we do. And I've sort of been fed. Oh, one thing. I want to introduce you just a little bit more. Introduce your practice. Because one of the things, when I first saw your website and you talked about everybody deserves empathy.
Oh, yes.
In whatever, however they're going to deal with their health.
Absolutely.
Everyone deserves empathy. Mm-hmm. And that for a very long time, I've observed that is lacking mm-hmm. in a lot of Western medicine. And it's one of the reasons I've disengaged.
Sure. No, that's understandable.
And, you know, there's a lot of doctors that are extremely dismissive
mm-hmm.
and a lot of doctors, and we know this, who are extremely dismissive of women. And you can find this statistically.
Absolutely.
And so I was really struck by that. So when we talk about your practice and where acupuncture can fit in mm-hmm. overall health, mm-hmm. add that element into it.
Sure. So first, I do want to say that I do know a lot of really wonderful and empathic doctors as well, and they exist. And I think that, so the fundamental goal of getting treated by a traditional Chinese medical practitioner is not to address any particular symptom. It's mm-hmm. to, I think the best translation I have found is to put yourself on your right path. So, you know, when you're kind of in that place where you're in a really good groove and everything feels great and you have wonderful relationships in your life and it's easy to make good decisions and wonderful career opportunities open up and you're just kind of clicking along in this wonderful groove. So that's being on your right path. Good physical health is just a side effect of being on that path. And what I wish for everyone is that they realize that that's a possibility, that you can really feel that good most of the time. And so I would love for everyone to think that they deserve to feel that great all the time. And I think that the person that realizes that is going to fit acupuncture and traditional Chinese medicine into their day-to-day life in one way or another, whether it's coming to see a practitioner like me, whether it's just incorporating Eastern nutritional therapies into their daily life, whether it's just eating less salad. You know, I certainly have patients that come to me regularly, whether they have health challenges coming up or not, and they notice when they miss an appointment. So I address a lot of really specific health conditions and people get better and don't come back, which is great. But ideally, I think the best rewards are realized when people just incorporate it just the way that they do healthy eating and exercise just as part of their general health routine.
And for people who are doing that, which is sort of just maintaining their good health, how often do they see you?
About once a month. And if someone is for more youthful people who can kind of realize the benefits a lot more quickly, people in their teens or 20s, maybe once every 3 months, even just sort of a seasonal tune-up.
And then so let's say somebody is on that right path, and they're seeing you in exactly the right rhythm for their health. When do they then start thinking about, oh, I need to go to a general practitioner or family doctor or something? Certainly, I would think, if you break your arm, you got to go.
You have to
go to a doctor.
Medicine at my clinic.
Emergency medicine is sort of when you want to then seek out.
You know, I would say, ideally, I think finding a terrific and empathic Western medical MD that you see, you know, once a year for a physical, and I think that's ideal. I think I understand it's challenging to find that practitioner for a lot of people. Around here, I always recommend the West County Healthcare
System. Yes, you've said that to me,
they
and I'm going to consider it.
Fabulous. Fabulous people.
They're in Occidental, right?
They have an Occidental clinic and a Forestville clinic. They have a Sebastopol clinic.
So those, they're all connected. I didn't realize that.
And there are others that I'm leaving out. But they're wonderful. I've never felt unlistened to there. I've never felt pressured into rushing or taking anything I didn't want to take. So I think a lot of people who come to see me, as you will understand, have really been burned on the Western medical system. And I understand why. And I think that it's important to realize that there are dismissive acupuncturists too, you know, and empathic MDs. And I think that finding the right team is really ideal. I like consulting with a patient's medical doctor.
Absolutely.
If it's warranted and if the MD is open to it. I think the more, you know, you have a team of professionals or team of practitioners that are working together in a cohesive and collaborative and collegial way, the better your outcomes, the better the patient's outcomes, for sure.
One thing, and this may not be in your domain at all. What about dentistry? I know that, I think from my experience anyway, more people are terrified of dentists than any other thing. So is there any dental component, or I figure there must be a mouth component in acupuncture?
The health of your teeth from the time that your baby teeth come in till the time that you you know, lose all your teeth theoretically, is connected in Chinese medicine to the qi of the kidneys. which is not related to your anatomical kidneys, more this Chinese medical conceptualization of the kidneys. They're related to bone density and all your bone strength, and so, you know, also your hair.
Interesting.
Yep. Whether you get to keep your hair, whether it grays early, all related to the kidneys in Chinese medicine. So if someone comes in, for example, if someone comes in with just dental anxiety, I can certainly help them to feel less anxious. Mm-hmm. If someone comes in and they say, I just have, you know, a history of really soft teeth, or mm-hmm. I'm constantly losing teeth, or, you know, I get cavities. I have 6 cavities every time I go to the dentist. Mm-hmm. There are dietary therapy strategies that we'll talk about, and acupuncture points that we'll use that tonify and strengthen the kidney energy.
Oh, interesting. I had no idea.
Yeah. And I talk with them also about, ways to approach lifestyle challenges that can help tonify the kidneys. Practicing self-forgiveness is a really good thing.
Really?
Yeah. To not further tax your kidney energy.
And
yeah.
What sort of dietary things?
So foods that tonify the kidneys are, one of the big groups is foods that are black in color.
Black beans.
Mm-hmm, black sesame seeds.
Black cabbage, although it's dark green.
I would think that, certainly the darker the food, mm-hmm. you know, the closer it is to tonifying the kidney mm-hmm. energy. Black rice, black quinoa, all of those.
Yeah.
And then also walnuts and small amounts of lamb are very tonifying to the kidney energy. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. Cool.
Do you like lamb?
I love lamb.
You were telling me you had lamb shanks and farro for breakfast one day, and I was a little jealous. That sounded delicious.
Yes, and I'm actually working on a column about osobuco. And, you know, I was researching the name. And it just means bone with a hole in it. Oso is bone, buco is hole. And so it's typically made with the shank, but cut. So you see that little marrow.
Yes.
Round little marrow bone.
Yes.
And so this was all inspired by Sonoma County Meat Company.
Oh, yeah.
And
I
stopped by there. My puppies were going to be in the car for several hours, and I didn't have treats with me. So I was driving by, and I stopped to get them a nice treat.
Uh-huh.
And I saw this beautiful pork osobuco from pork raised in Napa.
Nice.
And I thought, oh, I'm going to try. Because, you know, in Italy, it was traditionally made with veal.
Uh-huh.
And then the best osobuco I've ever had was made with beef shank.
Uh-huh.
But I saw this beautiful pork, and I was like, oh, I think I'm going to do this tomorrow morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to experiment with pork osobuco, and then lamb osobuco. I mean, you can do it with any meat.
Absolutely.
So, anyway.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. I remember having osobuco at Shanti's when it was up in Fountain Grove on our first anniversary, me and Adam. And I remember saving the little bits of marrow to put in my congee the next morning to fry up. Yeah.
Putting marrow in the congee.
So delicious.
Oh.
It was really delicious.
And
really delicious.
You know, marrow is so good for you.
It's as long as you don't have gout, yes.
Oh, okay, yes.
Yes.
But it's got lots of vitamins.
Yes, it's
got lots of vitamins and minerals.
It's one of the more nourishing and tonifying foods.
Uh-huh.
You know. And again, in small amounts, all things in moderation.
All things in moderation.
Absolutely.
And my puppies, I buy the marrow bones.
Oh, lucky puppies.
I've never seen, I haven't had a camera at the right moment, but I don't know if I've ever seen a visual expression of love so compelling as when Joey had it. And Joey's, you know, his legs are about 2.5 inches. He was holding a marrow bone and licking the marrow out of this, and just the look on his face and the way he was holding it, and it's like, that's just an image of pure
the moment
love
of my life.
So I get marrow bones for them at I usually get it at Furcrest has really good marrow bones.
That's great.
But also Sonoma County Meat Company, which is just, it's such a great resource.
They have great dog food, too.
Yes.
Yes.
The problem is Joey will eat it and Lark won't.
Oh.
Lark is picky. They have a very high percentage, I think, from looking at it, it's a pretty high percentage of liver.
Yes.
And she wouldn't lie. I even tried to feed her with a spoon. Because sometimes she gets, when she's not spayed and when she's pre-estrus or in-estrus, she gets very, very picky. And so I'll just sit on the floor. And I mean, it's only 2 ounces. Yeah. So I'll sit on the floor and I'll either feed her with my fingers, like I did this morning when she had scrambled pullet eggs, or, but she just would not eat their food. And yeah. I don't want two foods.
No, so, no, I can understand that.
Yeah, but it's great. They have great food, and it's a great price. It's all from their cuttings.
Yes.
And it's only $2.99 a pound.
Yes.
So if you have a bigger dog like you do,
like we do, yes.
It is a great resource.
Oh,
and, you
he
know,
loves it.
Because it's a standalone butcher shop, people think it's probably pricey. Their prices are really good.
They're very reasonable. Yeah. We've pretty much stopped getting any meat from anywhere else if they moved into the neighborhood.
They're closer. I get meat at the farmer's market and at Santa Rosa Meat Company. And on that note, we are almost out of time.
Okay.
So we're going to tell people how to spell your last name.
Okay.
S-A-X-E-N-A.
Yes.
It's Laurel Saxena. The website for the clinic is thesaxenaclinic.com, wellsonoma.com, and I find that I'm having trouble. If I put wellsonoma.com just in my search bar, it won't go there.
Oh.
And I don't know why.
Maybe
because
it's
new.
But
if I do well space Sonoma plus your name, then it pops right up.
Oh, good. Well, thank you for that.
Sure. I just, you know, I don't, I use Safari. I don't know if it's specific to Safari, but I think it's just probably because it's new and it's not Google hasn't spidered it enough or whatever.
Yes, probably not.
And then what about people who just want to give you a phone call instead?
Yes. So they can call me at the clinic. It's 707-575-4826.
That's 575-4826. And this information is already up on Mouthful's Facebook page, but I'm going to put phone number isn't, and when I get home I will put that up on on Mouthful's Facebook page. And again, if you're interested in being an intern for Mouthful, send me an email at catsmilk@sonic.net, or just go to Mouthful's Facebook page and send me a private message, and be sure to meet me back here next week for another yummy episode of Mouthful Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming in Sonoma County and beyond. Thank you, Laurel. It was a great hour.
Selling out, who can blame them? Wine to cash, crop growing strong.